Welcome to Healthier You by Vanderbilt Health and Wellness, a podcast to help Vanderbilt faculty and staff live their healthiest lives.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Healthier You podcast. I'm Megan Bergfeld, one of the clinical counselors in Work-Life Connections EAP. I'm happy to be here with you again. And I'm really excited to introduce our guest for this month. Natalie Dodd is here. Welcome, Natalie.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here.
Very good. Natalie is another clinical counselor in EAP with me, and she's going to talk with us today about self-compassion, which seems to be an increasingly talked about concept in the therapy world these days. Natalie, you recently developed a self-compassion initiative for medical staff that includes learning about self-compassion and how to embody it as a coping strategy in times of stress. I think that's necessary information for healthcare workers everywhere. So to start, can you tell us a bit about what self-compassion is?
Yeah, absolutely. So I want to make sure that I mention Dr. Kristen Neff, who is a researcher out of Austin, Texas. I see her as a pioneer of self-compassion, and I really see that she's made this concept of self-compassion a kitchen table conversation. So the way I describe self-compassion and think about it is it's really turning compassion inward, right? And so we're meeting ourselves where we're at, and it's bringing a sense of kindness and understanding if we make a mistake or we feel inadequate, instead of bringing in the sense of harsh criticism that so many of us carry around. So it's learning how to give ourselves support and encouragement in times where we could be really self-judgmental or really self-critical. The gold standard and what you think of when you think of self-compassion is, how would you talk to a friend in this situation? So in this situation, would you be offering a friend or a loved one more kindness than you're offering yourself? And, you know, more often, the answer is yes.
I know things I say to myself sometimes in my head I would never dream of saying out loud, or to anyone else for that matter. We can be really kind of mean in the privacy of our own brains. So how does self-compassion help us make that shift from self-criticism to self-kindness?
There's three main components of self-compassion. The first one is this concept of self-kindness versus self-judgment. So something that's really powerful to understand and recognize is that when we are self-critical or judgment of ourselves, we actually activate our stress response system. So this stress response system is there for a reason, and it protects us. Usually, you know, when we activate this stress response system, it's because of an external threat, right? Like, we need to run from the bear, something has happened, we need to protect ourselves. What happens is that when we are self-critical or self-judgment, we activate the stress response system and we become our own threat, right? Like, we're the enemy that we have to fight. It's so damaging. And just imagine when we're in times of stress, if we have this, you know, self-critical or this negative part, like, that makes it so much harder. That makes us so much more stuck. Where instead, if we bring this concept of self-kindness, what that does is it changes the narrative. We become our own ally. You know, in times of stress, what I would much rather have, like going into battle, is somebody who's there saying that we're okay, that we're protected, that we're comforted, that we're safe, instead of having somebody on the sideline saying, you know, we're terrible, you're doing it wrong, you're gonna mess this up. Like, that's fear, that's scary, right? So going into stress with self-kindness, I mean, oh my gosh, what an amazing way to be able to relieve something instead of making it even more punishing or damaging. The next is this concept of common humanity versus isolation. You know, truly, it's recognizing that suffering and personal inadequacy, it's part of the shared human experience. You know, it's not something that happens to just me. So, you know, I'm sorry to say it, but we are all inadequate in certain ways. We're all gonna make mistakes. And also the beauty of it is that we all have shared emotions to a certain extent, right? Like, Megan, you felt shame before, you felt joy before, you felt awe, happiness, everything across the board, right? So have I. Like, I felt shame, I felt joy, I felt happiness, I felt everything across the board. The difference is our experience of it is incredibly unique, right? Like, the way that we get there, the circumstances, incredibly unique. The actual emotion itself isn't, right? And so with bringing the sense of common humanity, it's recognizing, oh my gosh, like, I'm in a moment of suffering. I'm feeling so much shame right now. I bet I'm not alone. I bet somebody else has experienced shame. And it's not just me. It's not just me who's doing this. And it opens this opportunity for a sense of resiliency by bringing in community in times of stress. Like, we open that up to a sense of comfort that instead, you know, if we choose isolation and loneliness, you know, we're in it on by ourselves. Mm-hmm. And we need that sense of community to be able to get through hardships. Mm-hmm. And then the other one is mindfulness versus over-identification. So the way I think about mindfulness is, how do we become the observer, right? So, like, how do we watch the movie instead of play in the movie? We're not in the movie, we're watching the movie, right? So mindfulness allows us to become the observer of our situation. It's bringing in a balance of experiencing negative emotions. So when I think of negative emotions, it's those ones that we get really stuck in, right? So kind of like the shame or the guilt or the grief, like, we get really stuck in it, right? And so those negative emotions, how we experience those non-judgmentally in a way that is neither suppressed, so we don't dismiss it, and we don't exaggerate it, right? And so we experience all these emotions in a space of resiliency. And truly, a really harsh reality is understanding that we cannot ignore or dismiss our pain and feel compassion for it at the same time. That can't be done. So we have to be able to experience it for what it is and then offer compassion for it. And that brings us into also another concept, which is the yin and yang of self-compassion. So with the yin side of self-compassion, it brings in this sense of nurturing and kindness and tenderness and slowness and self-soothing. And the flip side of the coin is yang. Yeah, so it's like power. It's saying no in times of challenges. It's setting boundaries. It's standing up for yourself. The way that Kristen Neff presents it is this picture of this mama bear, right? So there's two images of this mama bear. The one is the yin of, like, this nurturing, you know, we're cradling our pup. It's soft, right? It's tender. And then the other is this yang, where, like, mama bear, like, teeth are out, we're loud, we're standing, we're saying no. So there's both. Like, we need both of those to be able to get through times of suffering and to get through challenges. And when we learn how to utilize both, it gives this sense of balance in suffering. In any time in life, if we feel stuck in something or if we're overusing something, it's not going to be as effective than if we can come into this flow state and bring a sense of balance. And we know we can lean on either. We can use both. So it's this sense of, like, you know, maybe I need to stand up and get loud and advocate for myself and say, no, this isn't okay, this is unjust. But then it's also saying to myself, okay, after I do that, how do I give myself some tender self-compassion of saying, that was really scary, that was really hard, I'm sorry you had to do that, I'm sorry you had to use your voice like that, and I'm here for you, I support you, you know? So we can do both simultaneously, mm-hmm. and it's knowing when to use either or, right? And so, again, if we get stuck in one or the other, there can be this sense that, you know, I hear a lot, like, self-compassion is only the yin, or, like, only tender. Like, we kind of get stuck in this misconception of self-compassion is only the tender side, where a lot of us don't recognize that it has another side. Mm-hmm. It has both.
Yeah, for sure. Many clients comment that self-compassion seems like it's too fluffy, right? Like, they worry that they're going to become, like, complacent or stagnant if they just try to be nice to themselves all the time. And I don't think people, myself included, honestly, have historically considered the yang side or that self-advocacy side of the coin to be part of self-compassion, for sure. Can you talk about some other, like, common misconceptions of self-compassion?
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, you'll hear me talk a lot. I do say, like, this flow state or this balance, like, I really do, this is concept of life is meant to have a flow state and balance. And so with what you're describing, like, there's moments that we get really stuck in a concept or a misconception of what something might be. So with self-compassion, I hear a lot of stuckness in those kind of misgivings, right? Of, like, what, and I swoop in to say, like, what it's not. Okay, so I hear a lot of people feeling stuck, and self-compassion is selfish. And I also hear a lot of people being stuck in just anything that is turned inward as self-care is selfish. And it's just, that's such a misconception of what those concepts are. And I always go back to reflect this, you know, when you're on a plane, every single time you get on a plane, What do you hear? You hear the flight attendant say the exact same thing, which is, put your oxygen mask on yourself before you put it on anybody else. Mm-hmm. That's what self-compassion is it's putting your oxygen mask on yourself so that then you have the capability to then help somebody else out. You know, if we're struggling for air, we can't help anybody else out, right? So it's not selfish, it's life-giving, and it's what builds a sense of resiliency, is putting that oxygen mask on ourselves first. Another one that I hear is really stuck is this self-compassion is just self-pity. Yeah, and so it's kind of like, self-compassion is like, you just feel sorry for yourself. Yeah, you just become the victim. You just sit in this and you can't do anything about it. That's just not the case, right? Is that self-compassion is honestly like the antithesis of that, in that self-compassion is a healthy motivator. It pulls us out of things that make us feel really stuck. It brings like those three pillars we just talked about, right? Like each one of those is what allows us to then be a healthy coach or a healthy motivator in these times that we really, really, really need it. And so self-pity is the opposite. It's bringing in, you know, what if we brought in the common humanity part, right? Of like bringing in community to rally around us, to support us, or bring in community where there's a felt sense of connection. If somebody's felt this before, and I can have this connection with somebody in a time that's really hard for me. And then another is that self-compassion will lead to self-indulgence. And I have this image where it's somebody who's, you know, like sitting on their couch in their cozies, eating a pint of ice cream, you know, binge watching Bravo, right? Like, I mean, come on, we've all done that. Like, but there's this side of like, there's gotta be balance to it. Yeah, like self-indulgence, like that, what I just described, that environment, it is so self-destructive. It's not useful. And we're using it as a form of escape, right? Like we're using it to numb out, to disassociate, to escape, to avoid. None of those things are gonna be what's going to bring us out of the circumstance that we're struggling with. It's gonna keep us stuck in it. And honestly, it's gonna make long-term consequences that then we're gonna have to deal with even after this event has moved past. Mm-hmm. And so, again, it's this like, we gotta bring a balance in. Sure, sit on the couch, watch Bravo, you know, gotta have my housewives. But at the same time, don't watch 15 reruns and don't respond to anybody when you know that you have some responsibilities you had to do today. Mm-hmm. Bring a balance in. And then the last one is one of my favorites to talk about, is that self-compassion is going to make you lazy. And I have so many conversations in this space of having the privilege of talking to, you know, medical teams and providers and caretakers. And we talk a lot about this concept that talking to ourselves any other way than the way we've been doing it, with harsh criticism and judgment, is going to lead to us being lazy. And one of the ways that I bring it into the conversation is naming it, of like, this inner critic got you somewhere, right? Like you're here, like these are high stakes. This is something to be proud of. Like we made it to like a really high bar, right? But if you recognize the only reason I think I made it here was because I was yelling at myself, I mean, oh my gosh, that's so damaging, mm-hmm. You know? And that just, it fosters this sense of worry and fear that we white knuckle everything. I hear so many times, like, I can't take in a compliment, but if I hear something negative, I'll think about it all day. It's like, of course you will, because your inner voice is so critical and it's building this sense of fear and worry that your successes can be taken away from you on a dime. And if you make a mistake, they're gone. And so what self-compassion does is, instead of being terrified that if I make a mistake, I'm gonna fall off a cliff and lose everything, it's that, like, it's just a little trip on the sidewalk. You know, like we're okay. We're gonna be able to just catch ourselves really quickly. And we can catch ourselves really quickly if we bring in self-compassion. If we have this negative voice that's yelling at us, telling us that, you know, we're lazy or that we're worthless or whatever it is, we're gonna fall off the cliff every single time. That's so much harder to pull ourselves back. It'd be a massive difference if you heard this voice inside of you saying, I'm proud of you. Like, I'm so proud of you. And that's not gonna go away even if there's a mistake or if you're not perfect right now. So yeah, so that's really the bulk of that, of this, how we can get really stuck in thinking of the misconceptions of self-compassion. So broadening it out and seeing that there is a massive difference in the lens of what self-compassion can offer. It's really powerful.
Mm-hmm, for sure. I think we work with a lot of really high functioning individuals, right? they're under a great deal of pressure. I think they've had to hold themselves to this very high level of performance to move through all these different levels of training that they've had and to handle these big situations that come up. And it breeds this expectation of perfection that simply is not realistic. And then when we feel like we haven't met the expectation, we really just beat ourselves up. How do we cultivate a sense of self-compassion, particularly in a big healthcare setting like this?
So glad you asked. You just teed me up to talk about the embodying self-compassion work that I'm really passionate about. So for me, recognizing the population that is VUMC is it's finding simple and realistic ways to add in self-compassion like on the ground level. So I feel like there's a really big gap of support for medical staff, and there's this expectation, I mean, to be so unaffected by the work that we do and be so unaffected from one case to the next. And, you know, we're working in such high stakes situations that that's just not possible. Like, we're not robots. Like, we're going to feel, we're going to experience, we're going to be affected, we're going to be activated. And so for me, it's okay, so how do we jump in and care for this caretaker? And every single one of us are caretakers. You know, the role that you are in within the walls of VUMC at work, you know, you're a caretaker. Most of us probably also, I would bet, are caretakers outside of these walls, right? So like, we're a well-rounded caretaker. And so it's just, how do we caretake for ourselves? And for me personally, how do I help caretake for those caretakers in and outside of the workplace experience? So I'm gonna focus on workplace ways to be able to bring in self-compassion and embody it to be able to help with what I was kind of talking about, is that if we are affected by cases and we do have crisis situations and or whatever, something has activated us, how do we caretake for ourselves in that moment to be able to build resiliency and foster the sense that we can move on to the next task that we have to do without going into burnout, having compassion fatigue? You know, like, let's get preventative about it so that we don't then have those back end conversations that are only about that we're too far gone or we're so burnt out. So if you're open to it, what I'd love to do is kind of walk us through a snapshot of what I offer for the embodiment of self-compassion guided meditation. So normally if I would do this in a different setting, it might be 15 minutes or so, but I'm gonna do a quick kind of 5-minute example of what it might look like. So what I'd like for us to do is put our feet flat on the ground and just allow ourselves to settle for just a minute. And I'm gonna move through this a little bit faster than I normally would, but before I move into it, let's just take 2 rounds of breath as a community, breathing in for a count of 4, and breathing out for a count of 5. And one more time, breathing in for a count of 4. And breathing out for a count of 5. What I'd like for you to do is to find a compassionate touch. So I'm gonna quickly run through 3 options. The first one would be putting one hand over your heart and allowing the other hand just to fall on top. Another might be giving yourself a butterfly hug, so wrapping your arms around and having your hand just land on the opposite arm. And then the final one might be cradling your face in your hands. What I'd like for you to do is to land in one of those forms and settle in for just a second. See what this feels like. And I'm going to offer you some wishes that I'd like for you to either repeat silently to yourself or just allow my voice to wash over you. May I be kind to myself. May I accept myself as I am. May I give myself the compassion that I need. May I know that I belong. May I connect with my basic goodness. May I know my own value. May I be strong. May I be safe. May I know that I am loved. And just closing here, allowing yourself one more round of breath, breathing in for 4, letting these wishes wash over you. And breathing out, letting go of anything that no longer serves you.
Thank you, Natalie. I know I needed that today. I have a feeling it resonated with a lot of other people. How would you recommend taking this practice and using it during a really busy day when you've got maybe just a few minutes or even seconds between tasks?
So what I would say is first, go back to that compassionate touch. So find that touch that resonates with you. Even if we don't have that, just feeling your hands in your pocket or just giving yourself kind of this like gentle reminder that you're here and you're grounded with yourself. The other would be leaning on one of those wishes that might have resonated. So let's go with the I'm safe, you know? And so if we think about going from two really extreme cases just happened and you're being asked to go into another room that has a lot of unknowns, is that before we go into that room, finding a compassionate touch, just finding a place to ground, giving yourself a round or two of breath and saying to yourself, I am safe, I am safe, I am safe. And what that does is it changes this activation in your nervous system from screaming at you that you are unsafe. It changes it to being able to tell our nervous system, I am safe, I'm uncomfortable. So we're not unsafe, we are uncomfortable. So you can say to yourself, I am safe, I am uncomfortable, I am safe, but I am uncomfortable. And just the goal is to bring yourself just a minute of comfort, just a minute. Just give yourself, or just whatever you have, give yourself just a pause to give yourself comfort, and that's one way of doing it.
Very good, thank you. This has been very helpful, and I think it's going to be relevant for hopefully everyone listening. If you are interested in learning more about the guided meditation, if you want to do that again on your own, we'll make sure to include that in the show notes for anybody who wants that. If you're listening to this and you think like your team would benefit from learning more about it, or if you want to learn more about it yourself, you can reach out to the EAP office, either directly to Natalie or to schedule with any of our counselors. Our phone number down there is 615-936-1327. Natalie, I want to thank you again for joining me. And thanks to everyone for listening. Until next time, take care.
Thanks for tuning in to Healthier You by Vanderbilt Health and Wellness. If you are a Vanderbilt University Medical Center faculty or staff member, you can earn credit on your Go for the Gold Wellness Actions log by listening to 2 podcasts during season 1. Simply click the Go for the Gold link in the show notes below to record your participation and stay tuned for future episodes.